child marriages exemplifies how the world's poorest girls bear the heaviest burden of disadvantage, especially those living in marginalized communities in rural areas. And it's found that sub-Saharan Africa and South Asia is where the practice is most common. But how are we faring in South Africa? I remembered and cited a case that took place in 2013, rather. It was before the courts, and it involved a 13-year-old who was married off to a traditional healer because the family owed the man for his consultations, and that amount had accumulated. And so he offered that the child live with him so that he can take care of her condition, keep an eye on her, and also suggested that she become his bride. And the family accepted because they had this debt, they were beholden to him, and he paid 5,000 rand in lobola. And the man was arrested, but was not prosecuted ultimately, but got to go home to this child who had not completed her education, and thus wasn't even in high school yet. So what are conditions in South Africa, and how are we dealing with this challenge of child marriages? Joining us on the line is Professor Deirdre Byrne, the chairperson of UNISA's Girl Development Program. Good afternoon, Professor. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Good afternoon, Azania, and the pleasure is all mine, and good afternoon to your listeners.
You know, when we think of child marriages, I have to be honest that I always think of our problem within the Ukutwala cultural practice. And we've seen different cases and confusion as to whether that's trafficking or not, and so on, questions that have arisen around that. But there are indications that suggest that we actually do have high numbers, and it's not strictly around how Ukutwala is carried out.
Azania, thanks for raising that. You know, the UNISA Africa Girl Development Program has got statistics from Statistics South Africa, so they're very reliable. Based on a community survey that they did in 2016, which indicates that there are 91,000 girls in South Africa, but younger than 17, either in legal marriages or divorced or widowed, or living with their partners as husband and wife. So I think this is a bit wider than the Ukutwala problem. Ukutwala is strictly speaking abduction. Mm-hmm. It's where the young girl is abducted. These are young girls who may have gone into marriage even willingly.
Out of the 91,000 that you speak of?
Yes.
Yeah. Do we know enough about the conditions under which this has happened?
We don't know anything, but we can make some suggestions. I mean, I can also suggest that these are cases similar to the one you mentioned about the young girl who was married to the traditional healer, that these are cases of extreme poverty where the family is willing to take money in exchange for their daughter being married to a man who typically will be much older. I mean, we can just make those assumptions because this is the kind of thing that would provoke people to such desperate measures.
And are we finding that there is a relationship between the numbers that we see, the cases that we see, and household poverty?
I don't really know, but I know that the greatest number of these girls are to be found in KZN or in Gauteng. I can understand that in terms of KZN's level of inequality. Economic inequality is very high in KZN. It's where many, many people are living way below the breadline. And in Gauteng, there's a popular assumption that Gauteng is a city of gold and land of opportunity. But I think for many people who come to Gauteng looking for a job, it proves to be the exact opposite. And abject poverty is the result.
Yeah, because I remembered Angelique Kidjo, who is an award-winning performer. She's from Benin. She's a goodwill ambassador for the United Nations Children Fund, also reflecting on this question, saying that from the work that she's done, that girls from very poor households, those living in rural areas below the breadline, as you say, face twice the risk of being married before turning 18 as compared to girls from households that are perhaps richer or better off, and those living in urban areas.
Yes, absolutely. But you know what, Azania, this is a multifaceted problem.
Yeah.
And one of the big problems is patriarchy, and patriarchy is embedded in culture. And in terms of patriarchy, families typically do not value daughters as much as they value sons. They value sons as people who are going to bring money into the family. and they value daughters much less because they think of daughters as being a drain. They think, well, they're putting all this money into their daughters, she's just going to go and join another family and just be a wife. And so they don't spend time investing in their daughters. And so the daughters, it doesn't matter if the daughter doesn't finish school or doesn't go to university or doesn't have a job. It's the attention goes and the resources go into the boy child. Yes. And that's another feature that we really, really have to address.
This belief, and it's hard for us to living in the urban centres to even think that this kind of thinking is still quite prevalent. But you say it's actually at the heart.
It absolutely is. And, you know, son preference and daughter aversion is something that is very widespread. And you just have to start asking people around you.
That's so true. And that means that their hopes and ambitions of studying further, as you mentioned, are undermined, and that she will remain a subordinate to her husband, to her family and what the family wants for her, and particularly forcing it on her. It doesn't bode or doesn't mean that there'll be a bright future at all. What are the implications on the long-term prospects of girls who get married as minors?
You see, and I'm going to probably start crying. Azalea, it's so sad. They're not going to finish school. They're not going to be able to get themselves out of a cycle of poverty because I think a good number of those 91,000 girls are already mothers by the time they are 15 or 16. Mm. Then will they have the money to be able to raise the children? No, they won't. So their children in turn will be condemned to malnutrition, under-education, and complete lack of access to resources. And those girls, their childhood is completely over. Their childhood has been taken from them.
So what can we do? Where do we begin to address this problem?
Because as I said, it's a multifaceted problem, I would adopt a multifaceted approach. Mm-hmm. First of all, I would make sure that illegal marriages are firmly and vigorously prosecuted and annulled and send those girls back into the classroom where they belong. Mm-hmm. And then I think we need to start working on those patriarchal ideas that say that girls are not worth as much as boys. And people need to start valuing daughters, which is partly where our program comes in. We want to educate girl children.
And hopefully their families as well. So we are taking calls this afternoon. Your thoughts on what Professor Deirdre Byrne has shared with us this afternoon. She's the chairperson of UNISA's Girl Development Program. And from the figures that they have, based on results released by Statistics SA, there's an indication that more than 91,000 girls between the ages of 12 and 17 or beneath the age of 17 are married, divorced, separated, widowed, or living with a partner. Those that live with the partner form the large majority of this group of 91,000. So we'll take your calls on 011-883-0702. Now, the law, let's look at the law, because we have several laws in South Africa. Sexual Offences Act, we have the Children's Act, which are very clear on some of these issues. So the law is being broken.
It absolutely is, but I think that in the case of child marriages, I think young girls under the age of consent, which is 18, their parents can consent on their behalf. And traditional marriage is another sort of a story.
So their parents can consent for them to be married?
I think so.
That's absolutely unbelievable, because even when it comes to sex, that is considered statutory rape.
That is statutory rape, and all of those girls who are having sex under the age of 18, it is statutory, under the age of 16, sorry, it's statutory rape.
So if it is to be found that this has taken place within a so-called marriage, there are grounds, of course, for there to be legal action. Do you find that there are prosecutions, enough investigation and prosecution into these cases?
Certainly not. No, it needs to be stepped up dramatically.
Yes, absolutely. And I wonder about the willingness of the victims to also be part of that particular process, whether there is enough of that, or they befall or come under a lot of pressure from the community, from the family that they come from. And of course, there is this inequality. There's a power balance, that they go into in these relationships if the man is particularly much older.
Well, money is a massive factor. And, I mean, we know of how many victims of domestic abuse and gender-based violence who won't speak out because the abuser is paying for their schooling, their food, their household expenses, or whatever it is. It's a huge problem trying to actually win the trust of these girls to get them to tell us about it.
Yes, yes. And to come forward about what has happened to them, because there are probably also further abuses that happen within the relationship that we don't address enough. Now, this is a problem, as I was saying earlier, it is global, but also very prevalent in certain territories, like in South Asia, like in sub-Saharan Africa. We know that often when we talk about it, we refer to it or talk about it in reference to it being a problem happening in other countries. So South Africa has to confront this problem as we are part of it.
Yes, absolutely. It's no good saying that this is not our problem. This is causing an enormous drain on South African resources. These young girls don't have, they're not participating adults, and they're not participating in our economy. They're not getting skills, and they're not going to be able to work in jobs and actually make a difference to South Africa's economy, and we know how bad that is. So it's going to end up impacting on all of us. It's our problem. It's not their problem, it's our problem.
Absolutely. So what is the what kind of work goes into changing this idea or this notion that boys are more valuable? How do we begin to tackle that?
I don't know, but I do know that top-down statements are not going to help. I think it partly comes from the top. I think we have a very patriarchal government. And people who are impressed by the government will kind of go along with the patriarchal values that they inculcate. But I think then you have to start working with communities and holding talks with communities and with traditional leaders and with people on the ground to try and tell them that girls are valuable.
Yes, I think with the community leaders, that especially in rural communities, that if we get their buy-in, then we are likely to see over time a change in attitude. Jenny Jones says her suggestion is give all women from 16 years onwards free contraception. There's one suggestion. And also there's another one that says that those that do this, including the families, should be arrested. And we've looked at the prosecution question, that there isn't enough happening in that arena. Another one says that in South Africa, we have a paedophile culture because we may, and this isn't the first time that this is happening, where we veil these conversations. We call it something that something else, where we need to call it for what it is. This suggesting that this is paedophilia.
I think there is that, but it's not just South Africa. There are many other countries where this problem is more prevalent than it is in South Africa. Well, I think in China, the number of women who were girls who were married before the age of 18, it runs into millions.
Wow.
So, I mean, yeah, it's not like we don't need to feel that we've singled out here, but it's maybe just, I don't know, it's maybe just a structure. I would want to say something very feminist, but I won't.
Yes.
I don't know where it comes from, but I also think, Azania, there's a big problem with parental responsibility, and I think parents need to take responsibility for their girl children. And because when you have a child, you more or less sign an unwritten contract that you will do the best for that child. These parents who are consenting to marriage of young girls, it's their fault. And I think they should be also held responsible.
Right, yes, and mustn't shirk their responsibilities to that child. That's a powerful note to end things off on. Thank you very much, Prof.
Thanks, Azania.
That's Professor Deirdre Byrne, the chairperson of UNISA's Girl Development Program. I didn't think these numbers stood as high as they do in South Africa, because often when you read about this problem, you'll be reading about contexts and situations in other countries. As I was referring to Angelique Kidjo, one of those superstars that I absolutely admire from this continent and the work that she has been doing over the years, that you would think that South Africa doesn't have it as prominent as these figures suggest, and this comes from StatsSA. So we certainly need to do more, get rid of this thinking that the boy child is much more valuable than the girl child. And evidence has been there about what the impact on society is when you empower the girl child, because married girls are amongst the most vulnerable people. When their education is cut short, they lose their chance to gain the skills and the knowledge that they need to secure a good job someday to provide for themselves and their families. And they become socially isolated. They can't be children anymore, and they will forever be subordinates to their husbands, who are much older than them, and their families.